All right, you guys. Hey, good morning. Good to see you. Hey, welcome home. We're glad you're here. You know, we really want this to be a place that's kind of homish for you. I hope it is. So, week before last, I went to Colorado for the week to see to do all sorts of things. I saw family. I saw my mom. My mom's 93, and any good son goes to see a 93-year-old mom, right? I mean, that's just what you do. It was good to go and see her. I saw my brother, who's a rancher, and some of you know that I got to do a branding on his ranch. It was totally fun. My job was to do the head gate, which means when you bring him through this kind of a stall, if you will. It's a small stall. You bring him through, and the head gate means when their head gets right past the end, you pull this thing and trap them in there. It's great. It's very nice. It's a warm experience for everybody. And then there's another guy who pulls the chute kind of closed, kind of squeeze their body a little bit. And then someone else pulls down these two little bars, and then my brother gets to do the psst, and he gets to brand them. And the calves always go, hey, thank you, that was great. I've got a number on me now, and I love that. I get to be identified, and then you let them out, and they trot off with just happy as a lark. It's a great thing. We had so much fun. Doing it. And all the people that you meet there, you know, one guy named Gary. Gary's a 60-year-old real cowboy. I mean, he's the real deal, you know, everything about it. And so he was working with the calves, and they kicked him in the knee. But he's tougher than nails. He's a total Marlboro man. Unfortunately, literally, smoked for 40 straight years, and the next day was going to see a doctor on Monday because of the lung cancer that's developed. And it's heartbreaking. And he just says, well, you know, I was just a stupid kid, man. Started smoking and just never stopped. And I didn't know. But he's not blaming anybody but himself, you know, and just going to live life. And it was good. And then all some of the other stories. You know, sometimes when you tell them you're a pastor, you always wonder what the reaction's going to be. Like, oh, yeah, okay, you know, forget you, buddy. But it was weird. Almost everybody there said, oh, really? Hey, you know what? Could I tell you what just happened in my life? Wow. Can I tell you that my wife just ran away with a guy? Yeah, our marriage wasn't so good, but this guy she met online, and he came and got her. I had no idea. And the guy she ran away with lives in Missouri. I'm like, oh, wow, okay. Lives in the St. Louis area. Oh, bummer. So just live people's lives, right? They're just hard sometimes. You walk back into family. I don't know. This is probably not true for you guys, but just so you know, it's true for me. You walk back in, and families have systems, if you know what I mean. They have kind of styles. They have habits they've developed. Some of those are really, 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 really fun and great and incredible. My sister's kind of turned into a little bit of a realtor of sorts. She owns several different houses. She owns these vacation rentals, and she puts us up when we come back to Colorado, and they're like really fun, and she's just really generous and really kind with it, and it was so much fun. There are other systems our family has that weren't quite so much fun, and they became really clear to me. Like, you know, just sometimes like, oh, wow, that's kind of the way my family works. I don't know if I like that. Problem is, you've learned it over a long period of time and learned how to do it, you know, and you just kind of fit right back into the system. And my whole work was to try to push away from the system without being a jerk about it, right? And not being mean or ugly or nasty or judgmental, but say, well, I don't think I want to do it that way anymore. It became really clear to me that there's this portion of my family that my kids who are adopted were not actually seen as full members of the family by some people in my family. And I can't tell you how painful that was. I can't tell you how painful it was for my kids to feel that their whole lives. And then for it to be said under the influence of a little bit of tequila from my brother that they weren't actually full. And I thought, you know what? I got to push away from this. I got to push away and say, you know what, maybe not for you. I get it, in the DNA, it doesn't work. Everybody's into the DNA thing right now, you know, like, okay, I want to be, what are you? And yeah, my kids don't have my DNA. I don't have theirs. They're my kids, though. Full, the whole thing, 100%, doesn't matter. And I felt this thing inside of me go, they're my kids. You know what I mean? So family systems sometimes are both good and bad, right? We could probably identify all of them in our families. Sometimes they're critical. Sometimes they're performance-oriented. You know, just family systems. And some of them aren't so great. And you know, as I started thinking about this series, hey, welcome home, connecting and engaging people in the church. Guess what? Churches develop systems and patterns and connective patterns. Some of them are really, really great, and some are not so good. And some of them are incredibly painful and hurtful. So if we're going to invite you to say, hey, welcome home, engaging and connecting people in the church and the church and the community, there are family systems that we got to think about and talk about and deal with. Real stuff. What is the church actually really like and what it's supposed to be like? So we're going to talk a little bit about those this morning, because when we started this, and I'm going to go real quickly, but I just want to remind you, where we started was in Titus chapter 3, and that the church is supposed to be where our lives are to be a welcome mat for people who need hope. People who need hope. Guess what? People who need hope are feeling hopeless, and they probably need some encouragement and some grace. Is that what the church is actually like? To say it's a welcome mat for people who need hope. Guess what? People are broken. Guess what? People are messed up. People have stuff. That's what Diane and I call it, stuff. You know, so guess what? They need hope. So we ought to be more like that. So Matthew 5, 18 and 12, and Luke 12 talk about dealing with conflict is critically important for a healthy church. One of the things that probably the human race is actually the worst at, and has America displayed that in spades in the last several couple of months? Dealing with conflict is ridiculous. I don't usually try to make these statements, and I never plan to say this, but I'm going to say it. In the whole political system. Now, you can go back and talk whatever you want to about Justice Kavanaugh and Dr. Ford or Democrats and Republicans. I'm just saying this. For me, the most embarrassing thing of this whole thing was, as a group, the whole Senate, and especially the Judiciary Committee, put those Republicans and Democrats together. It's embarrassing to me how horrible they functioned as a team. I just thought, well, you got to be kidding me. Can't we do better than this? And I understand we have differences. Could we deal with those differences better, please? I thought, wow. It's embarrassing to be whatever. But you know what? In families, we don't deal with conflict very well. In churches, we don't. Unresolved conflict festers. It gives growth for cancerous things in relationships. And sometimes we want to pound the table and demand that I'm right, I'm right, I'm right, I'm right. But you know what? Maybe if you want to be right. I remember meeting with a guy one time. He was shooting a movie in our neighborhood in California. And we were talking to him, and he said, I said, well, I'm a pastor. And he goes, oh, yeah, okay, whatever, you know. And then he said, well, yeah, my wife and I have been to counseling, and we've been to counseling with a guy in a church. And the guy said to me, hey, look, here's the deal. You can either be right or you can be married. You can't have both. Which one are you going to pick? Oh, well, that's pretty good advice, you know. If I want to pound the table being right, I may not be married very long, because guess what? You're going to have to work it out. Solve some conflict. You know, the next thing we talked about a couple of weeks ago is James chapter 2, that favoritism or partiality, an unfair bias that favors one person over another, violates the most essential core value of a gospel-centered church, to love one another, be inclusive. And we're going to talk a little bit more about that today. And then last week, Jonathan did an incredible, great job. I listened to it in the car on the way back across Kansas, because Kansas is a long drive. So I listened to it several times. And it got me through Kansas. Thank you, Jonathan. I appreciate it. And frankly, I like Kansas. I think Kansas is kind of cool. But most people are like, are you out of your mind? But I like Kansas. But true unity comes not from uniformity, but from diversity. That's a radical thought. We think unity comes from uniformity. It doesn't. It comes from diversity. Because to be really unified, you have to have different parts that fit together. Every one of you is different. Every one of us is different. Thank goodness. We don't need a body that's all ears. Is that like one of the grossest thoughts ever? That the whole body would be an ear? That's really... Now, we need two of them. And they sit on the sides of our head, not in the front of our head. You know, we just need them on the sides. But we need a body to have all different parts in order to be a body together. Okay, today we want to talk about 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 7 through 11. Okay, here's the big idea. If you want to check out, do it okay, but do it out right after these two slides, okay? First one. This is the big idea. For the church to be fully functional, it needs each person to bring what they have to the table. For a church to be fully functional, we need every person to bring what they have to the table. Maybe better said, it's not just what they have, but here, we need each person to bring who they are to the table. For a church to be fully functional, we need them to bring who they are to the table, because God made you uniquely. Without you, we're in poverty. We need what you are, who you are, to bring it to the table. Also in this passage, though, we're going to look at this. It's not only that, but for the church to be fully functional, it needs to each person to invite one another to the table. To invite each other to the table. To be what I call the Jack Buck syndrome. Jack Buck used to always tell the story, or really his son tells the story, that whenever Jack was out to dinner, you know, all people would go, whoa, that's Jack Buck, you know, I want to meet Jack Buck. Anybody want to introduce me to Jack Buck? Or they'd kind of hang around the table. You know how you do that? You kind of wiggle over closer, you know, and Jack and Pine would come over and go, hi, what's up, you know? And they're like, hey, could I just say hello? Or could you, like, give me an autograph? Or, you know, and he'd say, and what he'd say is, hey, why don't you pull up a chair and sit down? Tell me who you are. Pull up a chair and sit down. To invite each other to the table. It's the Jack Buck syndrome for Quest. Okay, so let's start. Let's look at the passage and see what we can do really quickly, and then we'll get to the end. We're going to apply it today. I'm going to ask you to pick two, just like we do over at Panera. We're going to pick two. We're going to have five choices, and we're going to ask you to pick two, okay? All five would be great, but guess what? We can't do five things, so we'll pick two. Okay, so I'm going to just have you do this. So let's kind of walk through the passage. So here's Peter. He's writing this letter, and he's writing it to the dispersed churches that have been dispersed around the Mediterranean area. So Peter enters in. He's writing this to people who are being persecuted. Okay, not only were the Jews being persecuted, but the Christian Jews were also being persecuted deeply, and they are being run out of town, basically, and they're dispersed all over the Mediterranean world. And Peter, who is the guy who kind of straddles back and forth from the Jewish world to the Gentile world, right? Because James is over here, the leader of the Jerusalem church. He's very Jewish in his approach, but he really is accepting of Gentiles, but he kind of lived in a Jewish world. Then we have Paul, who lived primarily in a Gentile world. He was really committed to being an apostle to the Gentiles, so he hung out with them almost all the time. And then we have Peter, who went back and forth from Jews to Gentiles, and he hung out in Jerusalem a lot. But we know that he was martyred in Rome. He was hung upside down, legend tells us, because he says, I'm not worthy to be crucified the right, up, you know, right side up, like Jesus was, hang me upside down. And that's what they did. And so here's Peter is going back and forth, but he's writing to these Jewish believers who are spent all over the world. And he's talking to them about changed lives. Their lives have been changed, radically changed by the presence of Christ. And so he gets to verse 7 in chapter 4, and he says, the end of all things is at hand. Now, he's not saying the world is going to end tomorrow, but he sees like in a telescope. In fact, here's the word. The Greek word for end is telos, from which we get the word telescope. It means the end or the purpose, illustrated maybe best by a pirate's telescope that extends section by section, right? And he's kind of saying, hey, as we look through this telescope, section by section, the end is coming. It may not be tomorrow, but you can begin to see it in more clarity as you extend the telescope out section by section, stage by stage. And he says, the end of all things is at hand. He sees the directional linear nature of history and what God is doing. And he's saying, this is going to come to an end at some point. The end is at hand. It's in the telescope. And then it says this, therefore, circle it. Therefore. He's going to tell us to do two things. First of all, this, be self-controlled, underline it. Because of understanding life, he says, therefore, be self-controlled. The word here is sophreno. It means a sound mind, a moderate, sane, balanced view of life. Because the end is coming, he says, man, see it clearly. Be balanced and thoughtful in the way you approach life. Don't be flippant about it. It matters. Life actually matters. Wow. But not only that, he says, not only be self-control, but be sober-minded. The Greek word here is nepho. It means to be free of illusion, to have a presence of mind, to have your wits about you. So they're very similar words, but he's kind of emphasizing these two Greek words, to be self-controlled and sober-minded. But why? Why would you need to do that? And look at this, very interesting. Underline it. For the sake of your prayers. Well, that's kind of odd, isn't it? You know, for the sake of your prayers, be self-controlled and sober-minded. I think this is what he's saying. Let's kind of highlight it here. Take life seriously and soberly enough that you can have an accurate and balanced understanding of what in the world the need for God looks like in any and every situation. Or maybe if you don't know exactly what it means in every circumstance, at least you know that he's needed in every circumstance. Could we have a sober-minded and self-controlled perspective of life that takes it seriously enough to say, God really matters right here, right now. And I don't know if I can't control God. I can't tell him what to do. But I can certainly bring my life in the world before him. You know, I thought about Gary, the cowboy. Say, God, take it seriously enough to go, God, would you protect his life? Would you deal with him? Would you be present with him as he goes? And he's going to do this biopsy by himself. And they're going to drill into his lung, and he's going to do it by himself. And he said, yeah, I'll just go to work afterwards. He's one of the toughest dudes I've ever met. You're like, holy smoke, you know? We have to pray for him. To pray for this gentleman whose wife ran away. You know, to pray for the others who were there whose lives have been difficult. To take it seriously enough. I don't have to get all crazy about it. But to take life seriously enough and soberly enough to know that I pray that in this world, God, it's necessary. And you guys, if we went around and really told our stories, we'd all have to say, God is necessary. God is needed. I need him to relate to this, answer some things. Sometimes he does immediately, sometimes in a medium, sometimes in the long term. Sometimes he answers by saying yes, sometimes he answers by saying no. But God is necessary in each one of these situations. I think that's what he's saying to us. And then he moves on to verse 8, and he goes, look at this. And above all, above everything, keep loving one another. Keep loving one another. He's telling the dispersed church who's going through a lot of difficulty. He says, you guys, above all, don't forget to love one another. And not only to love one another, but to love one another earnestly. It's an interesting word, earnestly. The Greek word ekthenses means this. But it represents extension. That's where we get the word from, extenses. But extension, it's a root word from the tension. And what it means is this, it's without slack, fully extended to its necessary outcome. Love one another in a way that it's reaching out with tension, with an extension to the necessary need. It kind of has a power to it, a meaningfulness to it. It's not to be done flippantly. But to love one another real, probably beyond what you even feel comfortable with. It reaches out. It extends itself to people. Above all, love one another earnestly. And look at this. Since love covers a multitude of sins. Here's the deal. Love does not cover up sin. It covers over sin. You know the difference? Sometimes we think, well, let's be loving. Let's act like it didn't happen. Let's excuse it. Let's not deal with it. We'll cover it up. No, you don't cover up sin. Love covers over sin. You know what Jesus did? His death on the cross covered over your sin. He paid for it himself. The sin that you wear like a cloak in your life, he takes it off and he takes his robe and he puts it on you. He covers over your sin. He doesn't cover up your sin or mine. But keep loving one another earnestly. Extension, reach out. And since love covers a multitude of sins. Wow, is that like a life-giving verse or what? I think so. Then look at verse 9. Here's pretty powerful. Show hospitality to one another without grumbling. Interesting to me, I think the comma should be show hospitality to one another, comma or period. You know, like, okay, well, let's do that. And the word hospitality, here's what it means. It means to be a lover of strangers. A lover of strangers. But he says this, show hospitality to one another without grumbling about it. Stop grumbling. Stop being so puny. Start loving strangers. And when he says one another, here he's writing this to the church. So even inside the church, sometimes we need to be a lover of strangers, not of strange people, though we are a bit strange. I don't know if you know, I don't know about you, but I'm kind of strange. We're all a bit strange. But to love those who are beyond your normal circle. And I think not only in the church, but outside of the church, to show hospitality, to be a lover of strangers without griping about it. I learned this week, one of the cultures of my family is to be a complainer. Complain, especially behind each other's back. I don't know, anybody have a family similar to that? Don't raise your hand. I kind of learned, it's kind of the way my family works sometimes. It was painful to find that out. You know, people complain to my face about others, but guess what they're doing to other people's faces? About me. And there's plenty to complain about me. I mean, it's not hard, you know, really. I mean, it's not difficult to find people's weakness. It's a no-brainer. But what do we do with it? But are we willing to show love to strangers without grumbling? I think it's this, in inviting people to the table, right? Hey, come join the table. Come join the gang. Come sit down. Pull up a chair. Tell us about your life. This week I decided that I needed the times. You know, sometimes we want to tell people the gospel, and I think we ought to. And I think we ought to do it with boldness. But sometimes we think the gospel answers the questions in their lives. We don't know the questions that they're asking or wondering. So I've just tried to start, and I've done it before, but even this week, to try to remind myself periodically, I say, hey, tell me about you. So there's this guy who actually accidentally walked briefly into our men's group on Wednesday morning at the Wolf, and then he went, whoa, I think I'm in the wrong place. So he walked back out, and he sat down at the table. And so afterwards, I just went over and said, hey, sorry, that was awkward. And he goes, yeah. And I goes, okay, no big deal. Hey, who are you? What do you do? What are you all about? Tell me your story. And he goes, okay. And he started to tell me his whole story. Now, I didn't get far enough to know how the gospel relates. Eventually, he finished his breakfast and everybody needed to go. But I thought, you know what? As soon as we begin to hear people's story, we begin to understand. Gary's got cancer. Neat cowboy. This guy's wife walked out on him. This gal's husband walked out on her that was there. They were there, the two of them, kind of consoling one another in the midst of it. You know, how's the gospel related? Well, so then here in verse 10, I think there's a process to this. Look at verse 10. As each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards for God's varied grace. I love that, varied grace. God is a God of variety. He's going to express his grace in unique ways through unique people, through each and every person at a right time in a right way, as only God can do. But he's saying to us, each has received a gift. You've each received God's grace. Each a gift, an ability, a uniqueness. And not everybody's is the same. In fact, everybody's is different. But he's saying, hey, bring it to the table. Each has received a gift. Use it to serve one another. And so I really want to encourage you, maybe in this church, maybe some other place, but use it. Of God being a good steward of what God has given you in the varied grace that he lives out. Wow. So he's going to give two examples here, verse 11. He's going to give two. This is among dozens that we could use. Probably a dozen direct gifts that the scriptures talk about. He's just going to kind of use two real quickly to kind of illustrate it. So he says in verse 11, whoever speaks, as one who speaks the oracles of God himself. Not because somehow they become God, but to be able to take God's thoughts and present it clearly and faithfully. If you get that opportunity, do it as one who speaks of the oracles of God. Don't get too wrapped up with yourself. But get wrapped up with what God is about and be able to apply it to the moment. If that's your gifting, use it. Another one, though, he's going to use here, the second line. Whoever serves, as one who serves by the strength that God supplies. The ones who serve, do it with what God has given. Enjoy it. Because you will both experience the pleasures of God and you will pass it on to other people by what he gives you to be able to serve in all sorts of unique ways. And when we start serving with a grumbling attitude, it all goes straight down the tubes. Boom. But to serve by the strength that God supplies. Well, why? Look at this. In order that, circle this, in everything, not just in some things, but in everything, in order that, in everything, underline it, God may be glorified through Jesus Christ. That in everything we do, that God, the beauty of God, would be revealed. This word, this unique word of glorifying him, is to bring out his beauty. So one of the cool things about being married is you get to watch your wife put on makeup. And not a lot, but just enough that brings out the beauty of your wife, this gorgeous woman. Like, wow. You know, it's not a ton. Diane's not a big, you know, not a big, you know, makeup gal. She's downstairs, thank God. And and then you go, wow, 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 that is beautiful. So you guys, he says, use the gifts that he gives us in this varied grace to bring out the beauty of God. Wow. And then look at this last line. We'll just grab onto it. To him, to Christ, belong glory and dominion forever and ever. So be it. Amen. Right on. So here's the deal. To him be the glory. You know, glory comes from its root is in a Hebrew word, kabo, is the Hebrew word. And it means to be heavy. What it means is to be weighty. The glory of God is heavy. It is weighty. It is substantive. And we live in a world that has made the glory of God Miller Lite. Not a big deal. The glory of God is weighty. It is heavy. His beauty, his awesomeness, his majesty, it is heavy and it is weighty. And with the poverty of us, we have made God to be skinny. He is weighty. He is heavy. He is powerful. He is glorious in every way. You know, sometimes we think it probably the scariest thing in the world is to engage the evil of the world and the evil of people. I wonder if the scarier thing really is actually to engage the heaviness of God, the glory of God himself. Because in the light of God's glory, I am found wanting. I am found inadequate. It is a scary place to be. It is threatening in the glory of God to really deal with my sin. And we just kind of glaze right over it, right? God is lightweight, almost excusable, when he is very, very weighty. And not only that, but his glory in Christ, there is dominion for all ages, from age to age, as the pirate's telescope gets extended from age to age, he is weighty and he has dominion. He has perfect dominion, means to have perfect authority. Perfect authority. He has authority in the entire world in every age, from age to age, so be it. God is weighty. He's heavy. And he is perfectly authoritative in my life. So this is pretty heavy stuff, I think, that Peter's throwing down here. And so let me just kind of review where we've been. For the church to be fully functional, it needs each person to bring what they have to the table. It needs each person to bring who they are to the table. For the church to be fully functional, it needs each person to invite one another to the table. The Jack Buck syndrome. For the church to be fully functional, it needs to sacrificially love and forgive one another. It'll cost you to cover sin. Not cover it up, but cover over it. For the church to be fully functional, it needs to seriously and soberly pray for what is best. For the church to be fully functional, it needs to engage and embrace the priority of God's glory, his weightiness. So here you guys, I have a challenge. I'd like to ask you to think about pick two. Let's just walk through them again. First of all, bring who you are to the table. Let me just ask you, you might be in a place where you're actually not bringing what you've got to the table, whether it be here at Quest or maybe in a ministry out there somewhere. You know, all these incredible ministries that are around, Young Life, FCA, Thrive, New City Fellowship. You just keep going. You know, I don't know what you're wired for, what you're made for, but you need to find a place where you are investing who you are in the work of Christ in a really significant way. Maybe it's in your neighborhood. And you're just, man, you're like digging into your neighborhood and hanging out with the folks, you know, and really making it happen. I don't know where it is exactly. But you need to bring who you are to the table because you're needed. Without you, we do not do well, okay? Maybe that's what you need to check off. I don't know if it is, but maybe put a pencil check there. See if we can, which ones are the pick two. How about this one? Invite someone else to the table. Invite people to the table. Guess what? You see that person? They're a human being that God loves and is the object of their love. Invite them to the table. Maybe they haven't showered in a few days. Bring them to the table. Maybe they look like they just came from the beauty salon. Bring them to the table. Maybe it's a guy. Bring them to the table. Maybe it's a gal. Bring them to the table. Maybe it's a kid. Bring them to the table. Invite them to the table. Hey, come join us. Come be a part of it. Hey, come to the game with us. Hey, come to, you know, we're going for a walk. Why don't you join us for a walk? Why don't you bring them to the table, being an inviting people? Just bring them to the table. You don't have to be an extrovert. You don't have to be an introvert. Just bring him to the table. Invite him to the table. Say, man, come on, join us. Come be a part of it. Come be in relationship. Come be with us. Maybe you just need to invite some people to the table. Some of you have people in your mind right now. You go, I got to invite someone to the table. They drive me nuts. Right, of course, right? Of course they do, because they're human. Invite them to the table. Okay, how about this one? Love in a way that covers over sin. Who do you need to love today, this week, that doesn't cover up sin but covers over sin? It might mean dealing with conflict. It might be dealing with the issue and willing to forgive and not demand to be right. Who do you need to love this week? Maybe this one, maybe the fourth one. Take life seriously enough to pray. Take life seriously enough that the best thing and the first thing you can do is to pray. And there are people you need to pray for. Probably people come into your mind. I need to pray for them. I need to carve out time to pray. I need to do it. Because bringing them before the Father is more important than bringing them before yourself. Now maybe you need to go engage them later. But you need to pray for them. And the last one is this, maybe the most important, to engage and embrace the glory, the weightiness of God himself. The heaviness of his presence and to bow before him, because he has glory and dominion for every age, for every time, for every person, in every way. The glory, the beauty, the awesomeness of God. And that we would glorify him and we would see his beauty. The one who loves more than anyone in this room. The one who cares more than anyone in this room. The one who is holy more than anyone in this room. The God of the universe, who is patient, waiting that we would come to repentance. But the end is near. We can see it coming. Therefore, engage life where it's really at. I think that's what he's calling to. So I don't know. Pick two, would you? When you get to Panera, don't get it mixed up. Get the broccoli cheddar. Get the turkey sandwich with avocado and bacon on it. But these two are more important that you might pick. Maybe you pick three or four or five. I don't know what you need to do. And I could yell and scream and get all fired up here and see if we could make this a show. But all I know is this, that the Spirit of God wants to speak to you in your heart. And so I can sit here confidently, not having a clue what you need to do. But I know that God knows what he wants to speak to you. And that as you walk out this morning, that you would grab those. And between you and him, you would take life seriously enough to do it. Say, God, you want to change my life. You want me to adjust here and there. For me, I need to invite people to the table more. I need to say, come join us. We'll take you as you are. That's what I need to do in this whole community. And I need to really engage the glory of who God is. Because sometimes I get too busy doing other stuff. And I don't take any time to actually acknowledge him for his glory and his dominion. Well, and it is to my own poverty that I do that. So where's God calling you today? And we'll leave that between you and him. But if you would embrace it, it would probably make a big difference. Okay? So why don't you give it some thought here for a second? You know, I want to like to invite the worship band up. They're going to come and help us kind of cap this in our brains and our hearts in a very unique way. But why don't you think about it for a second? Pick a couple. Write them down. Do something with it, okay?